Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto, chapter 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text 1, 2, and 3. Translation. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 divisions of statements regarding the following. The creation of the universe, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, the creative impetus, the change of Manu, the science of God, returning home back to Godhead, liberation, and the summum bonum. Text 2. To isolate the transcendence of the summum bonum, the symptoms of the rest are described, sometimes by Vedic reference, sometimes by direct explanation, and sometimes by summary explanations given by the great sages. Text 3. The elementary creation of 16 items of matter, namely the 5 elements, fire, water, land, air, and sky, sound, form, taste, smell, touch, and the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, and mind, is known as sarga, whereas subsequent resultant interaction of the modes of material nature is called visarga. Purport. In order to explain the 10 divisional symptoms of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 7 continuous verses. The first of these, under reference, pertains to the 16 elementary manifestations of earth, water, and so forth, with material ego composed of material intelligence and mind. The subsequent creation is a result of the reactions of the above-mentioned 16 energies of the first Purusha, the Mahavishnu incarnation of Govinda, as later explained by Brahma in his treatise, Brahma Sahita, as follows. Yakaranavajale bhajati smayoga nidramananta jagadanda saromakupa adhara shaktim avalambya param samurtim govindamani purusham tamam bhajami. The first Purusha incarnation of Govinda, Lord Krishna, known as the Mahapurusha, goes into a yoga nidra, mystic sleep, and the innumerable universes are situated in potency in each and every hole of his transcendental body. As mentioned in the previous verse, Shrutena, or with reference to the Vedic conclusions, the creation is made possible from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, directly by manifestation of his particular energies. Without such a Vedic reference, the creation appears to be a product of material nature. This conclusion comes from a poor fund of knowledge. From Vedic reference, it is concluded that the origin of all energies, namely internal, external, and marginal, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as explained here and before, the illusory conclusion is that creation is made by the inner material nature. The Vedic conclusion is transcendental light, whereas the non-Vedic conclusion is material darkness. The internal potency of the Supreme Lord is identical with the Supreme Lord, and the external potency is enlivened in contact with the internal potency. The parts and parcels of the internal potency, which react in contact with the external potency, are called the marginal potency, or the living entities. Thus, the original creation is directly from the Supreme Personality Godhead, or Param Brahman, and the secondary creation, as a reactionary result of the original ingredients, is made by Brahma. Thus, the activities of the whole universe are started. Om Vijnanandasya Jnanandana Svakya Chakshurvalikhanyena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Namah. Jai Shri Krishna Jai Tanya Bhagavana Shri Advaita Gadava Shri Vasari Gaurava Gavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. As you know, the Bhagavatam develops your spiritual understanding by first allowing you to approach the lotus feet of the Lord. That is done in the first 2 cantos. And then gradually, as you progress through Bhagavatam, you are very expertly prepared for the summum bonum, the 10th canto, which is compared to the smiling face of the Lord. In this way, by careful study of Srimad Bhagavatam, your deep acquaintance with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can be made, and that deep acquaintance will be well established in the spiritual understanding. Do not be put off, or do not overlook parts of the Bhagavatam where the creation is described, thinking this is not so important. Sanatana Goswami says that every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is saturated with pure love of Krishna. So in the beginning you may not be able to see that, but just by submissively hearing all of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will gradually understand that. The whole purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is to revive your dormant love of Krishna. As you know, Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of the Lord. Especially in this age of Kali, you can feel the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through this literary incarnation, Srimad Bhagavatam. As you know, the sages at Naimisharanya were wondering, what's going to happen now that Kali Yuga is coming? An intelligent person thinks, what will the future be? Not that you simply invest all your activities in the present moment. Even in management, whether it's of a temple, a preaching center, or a mundane organization or corporation, you have to spend some time projecting for the future. Future planning. And you have to do that, of course, with your own life. After all, you'll only be here a few years. So what is your future going to be? What is Krishna saying? Bhagavad Gita. Adibhutam Shado Bhava. The material universe, it's always changing. So that you know is going to happen. There's always going to be change. But how are you going to be situated amidst all these constant changes? It's like, between 20 and almost 30 years ago, I was in this part of the city. I was speaking Bhagavatam. There was a different government, a different law system. Now, everything is different. But still, we are speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. It's just I don't have to worry about, while speaking, all of a sudden there's some pounding on the door. I have to go running out the back door and hiding under a parked car or something. This used to happen. Sometimes our kirtans would get too carried away. And, you know, as you know, back then every street had its informant. So we got too enthusiastic because, you know, the devotees were so happy to see, you know, visiting devotees. It was like a high point of their whole year. Maybe three times a year they would see us. And so then there was a kirtan, sometimes they would get carried away. And so then we would sit down after kirtan to give class. And right, that's when the police would come. Fortunately, they, by the time they got to the kirtan, it was generally over. And they'd pound on the door. They pound on the front door to go running out the back door. So it was a regular ongoing affair like that. I remember the first time I came to East Berlin was in early part of 1978. And we always told the devotees here, you know, because they're always eager to render so many services. And also they were, this is, you know, they would come from all over the DDR and meet in East Berlin. There's only very few. It's very difficult to preach. So they would wash their dhotis and saris, and they would hang them on the line outside again and again, he told them, don't, while we're here, hang out all these exotic clothes on the clothesline. Because, you know what's going to happen. Someone, the informant, the neighborhood informant, is going to see strange clothes hanging from the line and call the police. This is how tight things were, how tightly controlled things were. I don't know if any of you were old enough to remember all that. Okay? Yes? How old were you then?
I was 18 when the war came out.
So you remember
something?
Very tightly controlled. Even you had to worry, you couldn't hang out on the clothesline, dhotis and saris, because, the informants were so meticulous. You know what meticulous means? They were so observant of every detail. Complete German precision, what's this on the clothesline? Strange cloth. Mirror. Call the police. Yeah, I'll get some benefits by doing this. So we told the devotees again and again, don't hang the dhotis and saris on the clothesline, please. But they would always get so ecstatic, because it was so hopeless. Especially if you were a young person. You knew all the enjoyment was going on the other side of the wall. They were clubs and rock music, the best drugs, everything. you travel over all this on the other side. And here you were as a young person, just trapped. So the few who came to Krishna consciousness, they were very enthusiastic. So you told them again and again, don't put clothes on the clothes, but they would forget. So once you're having a kirtan and class, and then I look out the window. I see, this was in, Kirkenick? Yes. And car, police car pulls up. So immediately, run out the back door and crawl under a parked car. Face down on the ground. The police came in, they searched the whole house. Of course they found devotees wearing the strange clothes, but because they were all from the DDR, it's a bit strange. Well, there's no doubt something strange going in this house, but they didn't find any foreigners there, so back to the police would leave and crawl out from under the parked car, go back into the house and resume bombing somewhere. So this was like back then. So now it's very nice to be able to speak in better circumstances. Of course, how better are those circumstances? People are still not Krishna conscious. Where is the real freedom? The only credit that we give one political system over another is how much opportunity is there for us to preach. Otherwise, we're not impressed by any of them. The way the material world works is someone's always going to be exploited. And someone's always going to be exploited. And then it changes. Those who have been exploited, they become the exploiters. And those who were the exploiters, they become exploited. Just like the former, president or whatever, Honecker. Big man for 27 years. Guardian of the people. And then, in a few months, finished. And then everyone was on his case. We're going to get you. Before, he was, he was the terror. Then, in a few months, everyone, okay, now it's your turn. I heard in 1989, just a few months before the wall was taken out, the wall will be here 50 years from now. It'll be here 100 years from now. A few months later, it's gone. It's gone. Well, that's material nature. fruit of Shilobhava, endlessly changing. Some devotees don't get so much caught up in all these changes, except we try to figure out how to use the changes for preaching. That's all. There's always going to be something, this way, that way, this political system, that political system, this economic system, that economic system. We don't so much try to understand whether the people are better off than this one or not. The differences are too small when compared to the overpowering reality that everyone is simply changing minds. That is the vision that a devotee develops. Never mind so much what your political or economic system is. People are changing bodies. What will your next body be? Now, of course, most people cannot focus on such a reality. They are too bewildered by what's going on around them and by what's going on inside them. Inside them, there are uncontrolled senses, uncontrolled mind. Outside them, there's so much stimulation, agitation, so much bewilderment. So, it's very difficult to find anyone who can actually concentrate on what their real self-interest is. Very difficult. So, our job is still the same in any circumstance. How to become Krishna conscious and how to teach others to be Krishna conscious. This Bhagavatam, as the Shastra says itself, is our very means of conquest. That's stated earlier in the Bhagavatam, the first canto. Just think about it. How can the Bhagavatam be our very means of conquest? What are we trying to conquer? We're trying to conquer the darkness of ignorance. That is, if you can do that, then you have the biggest victory. The darkness of ignorance by which you think this world is meant for my pleasure. Just think about it. How deep that ignorance is in us. This world owes me enjoyment. I will find something in this world to please myself with. And so, you look throughout the day and night. Well, what's going to make me happy? You analyze all the people around you. Are you making me happy? Are you doing something for me? You analyze all the objects around you. Are these things contributing to my happiness? This is actually a very miserable way to live. And such a vision of yourself and the world comes from the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is the means of conquest for destroying this kind of miserly vision. Miserly vision and miserable vision. When we hear about the creation, as we're doing in these verses, our intelligence is becoming purified. Because by hearing these shlokas, we start to accept that energies belong to someone. Otherwise, we wander around in this world thinking it's meant for us. But by hearing about the creation, we understand the energies have a proprietor. It's like if some of you have a home, and I'm just wandering down your street where you live, and I just see your home or your flat, and I just decide, oh, this is interesting. I think I'll just wander in and experience. I think I'll just, you know, walk through your whole house. Not your whole house, it's just a house that's here. You know, and I'll just, you know, see what happens. I'll wander in this room, I'll wander in that room, I'll open closets, open drawers. It's just this house is here. Of course, you as the house owner would be very alarmed. Even you might want to be hospitable towards strangers. But still you want to be acknowledged, you want to be consulted. But here we are, in the material world, wandering as if there is no proprietor. Without this understanding, we can make no further spiritual advancement. Therefore, the Isha Upanishad is there, as part of the Upanishads, to teach you the science of proprietorship. Isha Upanishad. The Upanishad particularly dealing with the proprietor and controller. No doubt, Srila Prabhupada found it a very important text to translate and write commentary on because it presents so brilliantly the reality of the supreme proprietor and controller. As you know, first, we have to accept that there's a proprietor and controller, and then there can be talk of peace. As we often say, we're not so much interested in believing in God. Our first step is to recognize the proprietorship and control of the Lord. That we have to experience as a daily reality. So the whole schedule of a devotee is such that the devotee is always reminded that Krishna is the supreme proprietor. Then you can make further progress and start to perceive the Lord's affection everywhere. But without understanding the Lord as proprietor, you'll never get to the stage of understanding the Lord's affection. Such affection as existed between Mother Yashoda and little Krishna. Krishna let her bind him because of her affection, her pure love in Vatsalya Rasa, her parental love, maternal love. Otherwise, Krishna could not be bound. He was Krishna was willing to just stay there and let Mother Yashoda try to bind him. No, she brought rope after rope, and Mother Yashoda was willing to stay there and just try to bind Krishna. Even the other elderly gopis of Vrindavan, they were smiling as they saw Mother Yashoda's efforts. Every time she would bring a rope and join it to the other ropes, the whole rope would be always 2 fingers short. So there were 2 things bewildering. First of all, why Krishna's waist is small, he's a little child. 1 rope should be more than sufficient to go around his waist. And then, rope after rope is added, and still, with some total, cannot go around Krishna's waist. That's the first amazing thing. The second amazing thing is that each time a rope is added, the sum total of all the ropes is always 2 fingers too short to go around Krishna's waist. So this is Krishna showing. Unless I agree, you cannot bind me. Krishna is showing his power and opulence. But more intimately, what is Krishna thinking? If she binds me, I won't be able to play with my friends. I want to go and steal more butter. So I don't want her binding me. That is the inner understanding of sweetness. Then Krishna saw how Mother Yashoda is becoming fatigued, the flowers are falling from her hair, she's perspiring, and impressed by her bhakti, her devotion, he allows her to bind him. Bhakti bhatam. Nothing else can bind Krishna, only devotion. Krishna is the one who binds everyone to the modes of material nature, the 3 gunas, the ropes of sattva-gun, raja-gun, tamagun. How can he be bound? He can't. Except by his devotee's love. That same abdomen where Mother Yashoda is binding, that abdomen as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu sprouts a lotus flower from which Lord Brahma is born. Now that is artistry. How many of you would ever think of creating something by sprouting a lotus flower from your name? You'd never think of anything like that. And because you never think of that kind of artistry, then you say mythology. That means I could never think of that. That's out of envy, using mythology. But if any human being does something so tiny that everyone praises, oh, glorious, how wonderful, how artistic, how creative. Krishna does something? Mythology. But you would never think to create something by sprouting a lotus flower from your navel. Now, Rupa Goswami explains in Raghu Bhagavatamrita that Krishna doesn't exactly create the universe the same way every time. In principle, he does the same way, but not in detail. Because what artist does things exactly the same way every time? And Krishna is the supreme artist. He's showing his individuality. This time, when I do the creation, it'll be a little different. Just the details will be a little different. Therefore, sometimes in Bhagavatam, you see the details can vary, but not the principle. What is the principle? Parashu Shaktir Vividaiva Shuyate Sabhavaki Gyana Balakriya Sha. Krishna has his own knowledge, he has his own strength, and he has his own activities. Sabhavaki Gyana Balakriya Sha. That knowledge, strength, and activities, they proceed so instantaneously and naturally that the creation seems like there's no one behind it. That the creation looks like no one is behind it is a testimony of Krishna's expertise. It's a proof of Krishna's expertise. But if you are vision is clouded by the modes of material nature, you'll look the other way. The fact that I don't see a person behind creation means there's no one there. Now why not look the other way? The fact that I don't see a person behind creation means that person is so expert in doing something that it's effortless. Why not think that way? That's just as that way is just as bona fide, genuine as the other way. Just think. You can say, I don't see anyone behind the creation, therefore there's no one. Or, go the other way. Just as logical. I don't see anyone behind the creation because that person is so expert that what he's done is effortless. Now, why not consider that way? Sabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriyasha. Krishna is pushing the buttons, so to speak, so effortlessly and smoothly that you don't detect what he's doing. Haven't you all sometimes done things and no one can detect it was you? Yes. In management it happens all the time. An expert manager, he does things and no one can figure out. He did it. Later, maybe, they'll figure it out. Oh, actually, he was the one who set this into motion. Actually, expert Krishna conscious management is like that. You inspire the devotees you're managing, and they do so many things. And then, later, they may realize, actually, although we think we're the doers, we were just inspired to act in this way. Or in personal relationships, you may not know how the other person has arrange things for a certain result. It's like often, almost every time, there are exceptions, but every time I talk to household couples and I ask, how did you meet? How did you come together? The man always says, well, I made the decision to do this and that, and I. And then suddenly the lady says, no, actually it wasn't like that. I did this and I did that and that, and then he had the idea that it was his idea. I see this again and again. And then 10 years later, you know, the truth comes out. And the man's astonished. Well, I thought I was the doer. And the lady says, you don't remember when you left your chutter in the temple and it was wrinkled, and the next morning you came back and it was there, nicely ironed? Well, yeah, I remember that. You don't remember that before your door to your office there was nice maha every morning? Yeah. So that's an example of setting something into motion and the other person doesn't know what's going on. So if an ordinary limited entity can do that, what about Krishna?
I can think of a good example right here. The devotees here from New Zealand, they're engaged couple, so I remember some years ago, I saw the first arrow fired. It's easy to see these things in a disciple, but you know, of course, you can't say anything. So, I remember Guru Vani, she was running a preaching center in New Zealand, and he was there, and he's an expert painter and interior decorator. So he was sitting at a table in a cafe-like area, and so she just walked into the room and then just kneeled on the floor and just, would you like to do this or that or the other? Yeah. Kneel on the floor in front of him. And I just saw it. You remember that? I mean, when a lady does something like that, you're sitting and she kneels on the floor in front of you. And what do you think? Like, wow. Right? Yeah, this is what it's all about. Isn't that what you thought? You must be very submissive.
Hey, but it worked. It worked anyway.
Yeah.
So, everything begins from subtle to gross, just as the material cosmos begins subtly, and then gross developments happen. So many times in our dealings, that is my point, you can see a person do something and the others can't detect it. They don't detect that it was that person who set all this into motion. Just like in the study of history. Study of history means you're always trying to identify who are the persons who caused this to happen. Just like now, since the fall of Durgindiar, I can see there's so many books trying to understand what really went on back then. Who was the one responsible? Why did this happen? Who was the person really behind all this? Now, we're doing that about Krishna. So what is wrong with that? We're trying to understand how Krishna is behind everything. And Bhagavatam is giving you that research. Krishna did it. Krishna does it so effortlessly that it looks like no one has set the creation into motion. That is a testimony to how expert Krishna is. By hearing about the creation in Bhagavatam, you develop detachment. You don't get the mistaken idea that, well, God created the world for our pleasure. There's no way you can hear the Bhagavatam's account of creation and get that misunderstanding. But that misunderstanding is quite prevalent in the world today. Those who believe in God, they think God created this world for our pleasure. They don't have the knowledge, and they don't have the detachment to consider anything else. Sometimes they'll argue with you. Why should we renounce the world? Why should we be detached? God created it for our pleasure. But when you hear Bhagavatam, you get jnana and vairagya simultaneously. You get knowledge and detachment. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Janayatyashi Vairagyam Jnanam Janayatyashi. Bhagavatam is the bhakti yoga process for simultaneously developing knowledge and detachment. Now you should try to understand how that is so. How it is so that by hearing Bhagavatam you develop detachment from the world. Sometimes, often, devotees are so worried, how will I develop detachment? It seems impossible. Oh, what to do? Desires are coming to me. Oh, it'll always be like this. It's always going to be a battle. Year after year, decade after decade, battling the desires. It's like upstairs in the room where I'm staying, I saw one on the back of the door, there's one. What does it say?
The desire is never, no. The desires are never extinguished by
fulfilling them.
Fulfilling them, yeah. It's like he put like oil on the fire.
Yeah.
The fire is strong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You think I have a desire to enjoy, so when I enjoy, then I'll be satisfied. But no. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Visparena Malena Cha. In lust, burns like fire, never satisfied. So, naturally an intelligent devotee is concerned about desire. Bhakti yoga means desire management. So, sometimes we become worried. Oh, my life, will I be battling these desires? Oh, what to do? But the mystic potency of the Bhagavatam is that simply by hearing Bhagavatam, your heart is cleansed, you develop detachment. Shrimata Sakata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana Vidyantasta Yavadyavi Vidyogoti Sahitsita. When you hear Krishna's glories, Bhagavatam is Krishna's glories, then the Lord in your heart, the Super Soul, notices that, oh, he's hearing about me, she's hearing about me. And then he reciprocates by cleansing the desire for material enjoyment from your heart. That is the mystic yoga process of Bhagavatam. First the heart is cleansed, and then gradually the Bhagavatam reestablishes your original affection for Lord Krishna. Amidst all the changes of material nature, changes of your body, like you used to be little kids, now you're older, and then in the future you'll be even older. It's like I can remember walking on these streets in the east part of Berlin. I can remember taking the U-Bahn. I can remember all those things. But that was years ago. Now my body has changed. The city has changed. But Bhagavatam is still here. Bhakti Yoga is still here. So you have to be smart enough to not get caught up in all the externalities, the changing, the transformations of material nature. That can seem difficult at times, especially when your own body and mind changes. You may remember what it was like when you were teenagers. Ah, you were like, all of a sudden your hormones, your chemicals changed, and you were caught in a whirlwind. Then, when you go into your mid-40s, something like that, not as strong, though, something like that will happen. It's material nature's last attack on you when you're in your mid-40s. Mm-hmm. That's why some people have their midlife crisis in their mid-40s. All of a sudden, wait a minute, I'm going to be old soon. I'm 45. I've just got a few years left. This is my last chance to enjoy. And material nature starts pounding on you. Yes, yes, your last chance. Find someone somehow. It's not as strong as in teenage years. But it's there. It's material nature's last powerful attack. It's a change. It's a change of the body, a change of the mind in relation to material nature. Sometimes even our devotees, they have difficulty with this phase. Just like, you know, gurukulis and very young devotees, children of devotees, they have trouble in their teenage years. Sometimes the same thing happens in the mid-40s. It's a powerful wind that blows. And then you realize how attached you are to your body. You're going to be old soon. Have you enjoyed enough? Then what usually they'll say if they're not very philosophically sound devotees, they'll say, oh, in the future, I want to renounce. I still have these desires left. I better go on an enjoyment binge. I better get into it. So then I'll burn out all these desires. And then by the time I'm 50, 55, 60, then I'll be really ready to renounce. Sometimes they say like that. These are all changes brought about by material nature. And you have to know how to steady yourself in all circumstances. Like so often ladies, when they're in their mid-40s, they just throw everything away. They just walk away from their families, walk away from their children. I've just realized now that I'm 45, I spent 20 years just serving everyone else, taking care of my kids, taking care of the husband, washing, cleaning, cooking. Soon I'm an old lady. I've had enough of this. They just walk away. I've talked to many men who had that happen to them. According to, at least in the USA, according to statistics, 70% of the men who go through a divorce had no idea before there was something wrong. Had no idea. It just came out of the blue. You know, that's how they think. One day the wife at the breakfast table says, I want a divorce. I've heard so many men say that. I couldn't believe it. I was just doing everything for her for years. You know, I went to work, I put the money on the table, I spend it, this, that, and other. All of a sudden, out of the blue. And then, sometime later, the men always said, now that I think about it, I wasn't really being attentive, I wasn't really being caring, sensitive. That's 5 years after the fact. But the statistics are, at least in the USA, 65% of the men who go through a divorce didn't have a clue that there was a problem before it hit. Listen. All of a sudden she came to me and said, I want a divorce. Oh my God. The whole world just disintegrated. So often ladies do that, especially in their mid-40s. Because material nature is pushing. You're going to be an old lady soon. You've got to be fulfilled. You have a fulfilling relationship. Another romance. Of course, the same material nature is working on the man. You've got to have the ultimate enjoying experience before you become an old man. You've got to have the ultimate passionate experience before you become an old man. Do something now. But very soon you're going to have to take Viagra. This is the way material nature works. So naturally, a devotee may be thinking, how am I going to withstand all this? Material nature is so powerful. It's true. But you can conquer. You have to know what your means of conquest is. Don't take the Bhagavad Gita, the ordinary book. You can conquer. I remember once, 1980, I was in East Berlin, and it was a huge snowstorm. And so the devotees turned on the radio to hear how the huge snowstorm was being handled. And, you know, then the person's just speaking the news, now they're all, you know, making propaganda always. Material nature is very strong, but our heroes of the GDR, they're out there shoveling the snow, clearing the streets. Do not worry, we will conquer. So, it's funny in that context. But for devotees, you actually can conquer material nature. That is the amazing thing. That is the mystic power of Bhagavatam. You can conquer your material nature. You can conquer the influence of material nature, which normally is impossible, just by attentively hearing Bhagavatam, especially in the association of devotees. And then if you distribute the message of Bhagavatam, oh, how even more glorious your life becomes. Some changes, transformations are always going to happen, both in your body, your mind, the outside world, economically, politically, this, that. But the devotee stays on course. And then you'll be very grateful later in your life. Because you, by sticking to Prabhupada's program of bhakti yoga as he's given it to us, you won't be cheated. You may go through difficulties. And of course, everyone else, sometimes even in Krishna conscious movement, there can be difficulties. But if you just cling tightly, you'll come to the point where you'll be able to look back and thank Krishna. Wow, again, I made it through all that. I didn't get cheated by material nature. Wow. I'll explain one last thing. The way material nature works is that by the time you get older, you are able to figure out a few things. But then it's too late. You don't have the energy to do anything about it. The material nature is the ultimate ripoff. When you've got energy, you're completely foolish. And your senses are completely wild. Then when you finally get some wisdom, even wisdom in the ordinary sense, some ripe maturity, then you don't have the energy to act on it. This is a ripoff. You can't win. Materially, the cards are stacked against you. You can't win. All right. Any questions? Yes.
It is said that whatever we do in Krishna consciousness stays, and if we stop in this lifetime with 5%, we start next lifetime
yes.
with 5%.
Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, Svapamakrisataranamasya, Triatemakobaya.
So it's a little difficult for me to understand because maybe I stop now and I do all kinds of sinful things, and the next time I start at the same where I stopped with life, but in the meantime I polluted myself like anything.
Yes.
So how
well.
Yeah, we in the process we clean ourselves, but then we pollute ourselves, and then suddenly I start again, I stop.
But because you polluted yourself, you have to suffer for all that.
It's purification?
Huh?
So suffering is the kind
of... No, you know, you stop your Krishna consciousness, you'll have to suffer for all the things that you're going to do instead of serving Krishna. Don't forget that part of it. You got to pay the price. And then, yes, you've got to, in your next life, you have to find your way back to Krishna consciousness. Still, Krishna is so merciful. Whatever spiritual progress you made, it'll stay with you. But why go through all this trouble of starting over again? Even though you'll start from wherever you left off. Why would you want to suffer the reactions of acting the way again? Better just to go on with your bhakti through all circumstances. And gradually you'll see how pleased Krishna becomes with you. For a while there may be some uncertainty. Is Krishna really reciprocating me? Does Krishna really notice? Just hold on a while, you'll see. And you'll never forget that. You have to make a career plan in Krishna consciousness, how to stick to it through thick and thin. As determined as the DDR government was, you have to do that in Krishna consciousness. Just remember Hanukkah's statement. A few months before the wall came down. There will be a wall 50 years from now. There will be a wall 100 years from now. Why can't we be that determined about Krishna consciousness? I'll be chanting Hare Krishna 50 years from now. I'll be chanting Hare Krishna hearing Bhagavatam 100 years from now. Nitsum Bhagavatam Sevya. Eternally I'll be doing it. Why not? That impresses Krishna. Prabhupada had that determination. I was explaining in Adventura. When I was a young devotee in 73, I had a letter from Prabhupada, which is not to me, and it's not in the folio, in which there was some problem with the leader, as happens. Happened then, it happens now. And so Prabhupada started off by writing, I've given you such a big chance to be a leader in Krishna consciousness. I'm sure you can understand how sad I'm feeling to hear these things about you, hear these reports that you got off in this way, got off in that way. I've given you a big, big chance, but now I'm hearing this. And then he said, but I know Lord Chaitanya will send me the right persons to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. If not you, someone else. So Prabhupada was simultaneously expressing his sadness as well as his complete determination. Okay, you had your chance. You didn't use it. Someone else will come along and will do the job. I know Lord Chaitanya will send the right person. If not you, okay, then someone else. That's determination. Any other questions? Yeah.
Guru Maharaj said how people will say that they think God gave us the material world for our enjoyment. How would you like correct somebody's vision on that if they don't accept Bhagavatam as an authority in their preaching?
Well, God gave you this world for your enjoyment. Well, how come you're not enjoying? Where's the enjoyment? Ask them. Tell them. What's the enjoyment?
But a lot of people do think that they're enjoying. They accept the suffering, so...
Well, you have to just ask them, what is your enjoyment? What will they say?
having friends or...
What is that, having friends? Friends come and go. Are you really satisfied just having friends? Friends mean those who agree with you, no matter what crazy thing you do. That's a friend. you ask them, how are you enjoying? And then you point out, you call this pleasure? Even if you think it's pleasure, it's so tiny, it's insignificant. You can do that if you're not intimidated. If you understand there's no value except for serving Krishna, then you won't be intimidated by all these false presentations. We're enjoying, we're happy. It's like Berlin can be a very intimidating place in terms of material things to do, material happiness. Active place, it's always something going on. That's why it reminds you of New York City. So you can be bewildered by that. Ah, but there are other things to do than serve Krishna, other things to get into. As long as you're intimidated in that way, you can't really be effective in your preaching. So you have to first convince yourself. Think about it. What is the enjoyment? Material enjoyment comes down to a few very simple things. That's all. And yet, yes.
Yesterday you said in the question part to one girl that the real secret is that you should only have a relation to Krishna and not to anybody else.
I have no relation to anyone else. I said like that.
I understood it. Krishna is the most.
What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? After he says you should approach a guru to understand him, in the next verse he says, Yajgatga. Nakpadamoha. When you've understood this truth about me, you'll know that all living beings are my parts, mine. So if you're actually Krishna conscious, you understand how to deal with everyone as part of Krishna. But the relationship goes through Krishna. That is the point. You can't love anyone directly. You have to go through Krishna. How do you love someone by going through Krishna? You help that person to be Krishna conscious. You can't love someone directly. You understand? You can't love your children, you can't love your husband, you can't love your mother or father directly. It doesn't work. But if you go through Krishna, that means if the relationship has Krishna in the center, then there's actual real love. Because you're acting towards that part and parcel of Krishna in a way that heightens their Krishna consciousness. So the relationship becomes Krishna surcharged. Okay? So I didn't say, no relationships with anyone. No. One who is Krishna conscious has relationships with everyone. Otherwise, what was I doing, coming to East Berlin? Preaching expands your loving ability beyond the bodily conception. That's why it's so wonderful to preach. The bodily conception actually restricts your love. Okay. That's enough for now. Thank you very much. Thank you.